Hey, this is Chris Marshall. Welcome to the Owner to Associate podcast. For today's episode, we are going to be doing a practice evaluation, and there are a lot of pictures and numbers. If you want to check out the video version, we have a video version of this posted on YouTube. I will link to it in the description. Enjoy the episode, and let's get into it. Today, we're going to be looking at an actual practice, and we're going to see if this is a practice that will be worth buying. We're going to start out by looking at some of the pictures of the practice. So this first one, we have a dental chair in a room with some brick behind. That brick actually looks really good. I do like the overall look of this office. It's obviously outdated. It's got the cuspidor on the chair, which is kind of gross. Hopefully you can take that off. The floor is tile. I mean, it actually looks pretty nice. I think if you come in, you do a little bit of upkeep. Here's another picture. The radiograph tube head is ancient in this. Wow, that looks ancient. Yeah, I would just go ahead and assume you're probably gonna have to buy a new x-ray for this practice. You might be able to buy a Nomad and just take that off the wall. I mean, that's up to you. Computers look old. You're gonna wanna buy new computers for sure. Here's a picture of the waiting room. Those bricks are really cool. You know, I think that the waiting room, it could use some updates, but I think you could really make this place look nice. Oh my God. Goodness. Why on earth would they include this picture? There's a picture zoomed in showing the lab room. Yeah, I don't know why they included this. I mean, I don't really do any lab work, honestly. I just send it all off to the laboratory and let them do it. Maybe you want to do some lab work. So here's a picture of the outside of the building. You know, it's old. It's not great. It's a freestanding building. The owner owns the building. It's got 5 operatories and a little lab room and a waiting room and a sterilization room. It's not huge, but it's definitely big enough for a single doctor. I personally like having more ops than that. I certainly would be hesitant buying a practice that has 4, 3, or 2 operatories, but 5 is a decent number. Overall, while it certainly looks a little bit dated, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you're going to come in and you're going to be able to renovate and clean things up a little bit. And then right off the bat, you're going to be getting more new patients because you make this building look more modern. So generally, the very first thing that I'm going to look at is I'm going to see what was the production of the practice like in the previous year to get an idea of what the size for this practice was. So in this example, the practice last year did $620,000 in production. However, it appears the doctor only collected $535,000. So I wouldn't even pay attention to that 620 number. I would just look at the 535. So production last year was $535,000. Now, every practice is going to calculate their numbers differently, but generally having a collections rate of 87% is really bad. Most practices are usually able to collect more like 95%. I'm almost wondering if in this situation they are counting insurance write-offs in this number. If I was setting up my computer system, I would not count insurance write-offs as a lack of collections. I would just have the number that the insurance pays as my production number. But some dentists set their cash price as the production number, and then they collect less because of the insurance write-offs. So it's just different ways of looking at it. You have to get an idea of how was the dentist that you're buying from, how did they calculate their production number? Out of that $535,000, it looks like the doctor had an income of $160,000. We're gonna get into the actual income statement in a little bit to verify this number, but assuming that that number is correct, that leaves us with a profit margin of 30% and an overhead of 70%. Right off the bat, the overhead's a little bit high. I definitely think you can get that overhead down. Now, the easiest way to reduce the overhead of a dental practice is not gonna be by cutting expenses, it's gonna be by growing the production. Now, the location is suburban. The office type is a freestanding building, and the seller owns the building. It's about 30 minutes outside of a medium-sized city. The practice currently has 4 hygiene days per week. Likely that means that there's 1 hygienist working 4 days a week. Now, sometimes you'll see like 6 hygiene days a week, and that's because you have 1 full-time and 1 part-time. Average hygiene patient seen per day is 8 patients.
That's pretty typical.
So in the previous year, this practice did $540,000 in production. So this is definitely a smaller practice. I don't think there's anything wrong with buying a smaller practice. You're gonna make more money starting out if you buy a larger practice. But when you buy a smaller practice like this, there's a lot more room for growth, and you're going to be paying a lot less for the practice, so your loan's going to be much lower. The key, especially when you're buying smaller practices, is going to be verifying that there are plenty of hygiene patients on the schedule. So this page says that there's 770 active patients on recall. That's probably not enough patients for a dentist to be working full time, although it could definitely be a good start. I find that most dentists that are making $400,000 plus usually have at least 1,000 active patients on their hygiene schedule, usually more like 2,000. 770 is enough though to have a really good start. And just starting out with that, I think you can do pretty well in your first year. If you had the option to buy a practice with more patients in the area that you were wanting to live, I would take it. But if this is your best option, then I definitely wouldn't be afraid of this practice. I think there's a good amount of growth potential here, but there's also enough that you're gonna have enough cash flow starting out to where you're not gonna have to work a second associate job. All right, so now we are going to get into the actual income statement of the practice. So we have gross collections of $533,000. Doctor collections, $414,000. Hygiene collections, $118,000. That puts us at 77% doctor production and 22% hygiene collection. This is a pretty typical number, 22% hygiene. You certainly wouldn't want to buy a practice that's doing substantially less than that. If you can find one that's doing more, that's better. But 22 is kind of average. Practices in the 20 to 30% range are generally the types of practices that you want to buy. If you can find one above 30, that's even better, obviously. When you start getting into practices that only have like 10% hygiene production, that's a practice that you have to be very careful about buying, because if 90% of the production is being done by the selling dentist, there probably aren't as many patients on the schedule as if you bought a practice that had a much higher hygiene percentage. So 22%, good enough. Next, we're going to get into expenses. Now, keep in mind, when you're looking at the expenses for a practice that you're trying to buy, they're really not that important, because when you come in, you're going to be able to change the expenses as you need. There's really only a few key expenses that you want to make sure you're looking at. We're going to glance over all of them today just to get an idea, but the main things you want to be looking at are the rent of the building, because that's something that you generally can't change. Payroll expense, because you're not going to want to fire a bunch of employees starting out, so you're going to have to continue that payroll. And then pretty much everything else on the sheet, you're going to be changing when you take over the practice. So I'm actually going to pull up a page. This is my book that I wrote, Buying Freedom, the Dental Practice Purchase Handbook. Check it out on Amazon. I recommend it, especially if you're looking to buy a dental practice. But we're going to open up to page 159 here. We've got listed out the major categories of overhead, and we have listed the average percentages that you're going to be looking for in practices. So we are going to look at this income statement. Salaries by staff, $163,000 last year. That's 30.7%. And then in addition to that, you have payroll taxes of 2.7%. So I always like to add in payroll taxes into payroll for the purpose of these evaluations. So it looks like this practice has about 33% staff overhead cost. The range that you want to be in is 25 to 30%. The easiest way to get overhead down is to increase the production of the practice. So if you're a new dentist, you're coming in, you're buying this office. In this case, the dentist selling this practice is in his 80s. He's really been slowing down. You're gonna come in, you're gonna increase production, and as long as you're not hiring too many new people, you're gonna easily be able to get that staff salary range back into the 25 to 30%. No problem. I think you could easily get it down to 25% or lower at this practice if you're able to grow it without having to hire too many new people. Next category is dental supplies, 5 to 7%. He's paying 7%. Likely you're gonna be able to get this number down even further, especially if you're using a digital scanner instead of impression material. If you're able to find good deals on buying stuff online, that's a good way to save some money. However, I wouldn't focus too much on trying to lower the supply cost. It's just so much more efficient for you to focus on raising the production of the practice. Facility costs are gonna be somewhere between 5 to 10%. So in this case, the seller owns the building that he's working in. The practice broker has estimated that you're gonna be paying $36,000 to rent this office. because the seller owns the building, it's almost a guarantee that he wants to sell this building, especially if he's in his 80s, and he might be able to sell this building for $500,000-$600,000 or more, depending on what the location is. In fact, the seller is probably going to be able to sell the building for more money than the practice itself. See if you're able to get financing to buy the building. It's usually really easy to get a loan to buy a practice. Sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to find a loan to buy the building. Oftentimes with practice loans, you don't have to have any money as a down payment. But sometimes when you buy the building itself, they do want a down payment of, you know, maybe 10, 15%. In this case, because this building is probably going to be selling for $500,000 to $600,000, you're only going to need $50,000 to $75,000 saved up for the down payment. But if you're in a larger city where the building might be worth $2 million or $3 million, then trying to buy the building at the same time you buy the practice is going to be a lot more difficult, because now you need to have $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 saved up for that down payment. I would personally initially try to see, would it be an option to have a guaranteed lease on this building for either 1 or 2 years, after which you have the ability to purchase the office. If the dentist decides he's going to sell the office to someone else after that initial period of 1 to 2 years, you want to make sure that you have the first right of refusal, which means that you're going to have something like 30 to 60 days, depending on what you put into the contract, to try to find a loan and see if you're able to, at that point in time, purchase the building. And if you're not, then it would be within the right for this seller to sell the building to someone else. Because this building is older, it's actually in a pretty good location of town. It wouldn't actually be a terrible idea to be in this building long term, but it's going to need a lot of renovations. And it can be really difficult to do renovations in a practice while you're still working in that practice. In my practice, I did some minor renovations. I was just painting walls and replacing some furniture, so there wasn't any moving of any walls or anything major. But even just painting the walls was a huge disruption to the patients. Patients came in, it smelled like new paint. There was actually painters there in the office painting the walls while there were patients in the chairs. And if I was to go back in time, I would not do that again. But I really didn't have any other option, because I wasn't prepared to close the office for an extended period of time while we did the painting and the renovations. But I also didn't have another place to take the patients to. So if you're looking at a building and you think, well, this building is nice location, but it needs major renovations. I'm talking, you know, multiple months moving walls, adding doors, adding windows, redoing the flooring, redoing ceilings, then you're going to need to make sure you have a place that you can see patients other than this office. Ideally somewhere that's not too far away, because patients aren't going to want to drive that far. And especially if you're a new dentist and they don't really know you that well, they're not going to drive far at all. They're just going to find another dentist. If I was looking at this office in particular, my strategy would be try to lease it for 2 years, and then after the 2 years, move to a better location. Ideally somewhere close by across the street. Maybe I would build my own building. Maybe I'd find something to lease. Maybe I'd find something to buy. I would stay in this old building until the new office was ready to see patients in. And then I would do a clean break. I would be letting patients know 6 months in advance when they come for their cleaning appointment, say, hey, next time we're gonna be in this new building and it's gonna be so much nicer. It's brand new. We have brand new equipment. It's gonna be a great experience. Make sure the patients are excited about coming to this new building. Maybe it's in a more convenient location, maybe there's more parking. Make sure to sell on why this new building is better, and then when you reschedule patients, give them the new address and tell them where it's going to be. If we are able to lease this building for $36,000 a year, which is what they have listed on this paper, we need to verify that, then that's going to put us at 6.7% of production. So that's well within the range. So I would say that's a decent price to pay for your rent. That's pretty low, actually. You might have to pay a little bit more than that. Next is equipment cost, something like 3 to 5% per year. Equipment cost is going to be extremely variable. Some years you're going to be spending a lot on equipment. Some years you're going to be spending nothing or very little, just on repairs and maintenance. Chances are, if you're a dentist who's trying to sell your practice, you're probably not buying new equipment. So it's probably going to be pretty low on you. Here we have repairs. He spent $2,000 the previous year on repairs. And I'm not seeing any other equipment expenses listed here, which means he probably hasn't bought any new equipment, which is completely fine. Honestly, I'd be just fine buying a practice where the equipment is old, because then you can come in and buy new equipment, buy the things that you actually like once you've worked there for a year or two and actually made some money. Marketing and advertising, 3 to 5%. he's probably not doing anything. That's probably a fee that he's paying for a website or maybe a phone bill. Maybe he's paying to have his name put in a school yearbook. And then we have administrative costs, 2-5%, miscellaneous costs, 2-5%. So let's get in and look at the other expenses that are listed on here. I'm just going to go through some of these major expenses. We have lab expense, which he spent $85,000 on. So with gross collections of $533,000, that means 16% of his collections are going to lab. That's ridiculous. That is such a high number. Generally, the lab expenses at an office that's being run well are going to be more like 5-7%. If you're using high-end cosmetic labs, you're going to be paying more. But if you're doing high-end cosmetic work, you're going to be charging the patient more. Especially if you're doing digital scanning and sending your work off to the lab, you can get really good zirconia crowns for $50 a crown. Now we need to look at some of the things that we're going to add back in. Professional fees, he spent $5,000. That's a lot. I'm not really sure what. Probably he's joining the ADA and maybe he's paying to have his name in the book of best dentists or whatever. Chances are you're not going to be paying that much per year unless you just want to. Insurance malpractice, he spent $2,000. That's kind of average. He has an automobile expense in here. He's got an interest expense of $5,000. I'm not really sure what that's from. You might want to ask about it, but it's probably nothing you have to worry about. All right, so next we're going to get into my favorite report, the report where you can really find out all the details about this practice and figure out what's actually taking place in the practice. It's the production per procedure report. Every computer system is going to have different names for this report. I like to call it production per procedure. This one's calling it service codes productivity master. So same thing. Now they have it sorted from high to low on total production. Sometimes you'll sort by ADA code, which can also be helpful. So there's a bunch of things we can find out in the production procedure report that we're going to be looking for. If you haven't already checked it out, I've actually made a practice evaluation checklist. It's available on my website. It's a free download. It goes through a lot of the things we're looking at today and gives you concrete numbers of things you're looking for. It has a whole section on the production per procedure report. I will link to it in the description. You can just go there and you can download this for free. So check that out. First thing we're going to do when we look at this report is we're just going to go through and we're just going to kind of skim over it to see if it logically makes sense and if it matches the numbers we've already looked at. So the sum at the very end says $618,000 in production. When we looked at our income statement, we had a gross collections of $533,000. So keep in mind when we're reading the production column on this sheet, just in our heads, we're going to take off about 20% from each number to account for that collections number. So the number one item where this dentist makes the majority of his money is the porcelain fused to metal crown. And he did $108,000 last year. That's 85 units of PFM crowns. Something to keep in mind with PFM crowns is a lot of times the porcelain tends to fracture off the metal. I would rather use a zirconia crown for a posterior. They're a lot stronger. They're easier to work with. And then on anteriors, sometimes I'll do zirconia, but a lot of times I'll do either Emax or porcelain. So you're probably going to have a lot of patients coming to this practice with crowns that are broken and fractured. And that's going to be a pretty easy thing to make a new crown for them. So that's going to be some production right off the bat. So that's not necessarily a bad thing to see. Second on the list is the pro fee. That's a good sign. I like it when the pro fee's high up on the list. $100,000 from pro fees, and he did 1,172 pro fees done in the previous year. So just seeing that number warms my heart. For the size of this practice, doing over 1,000 pro fees, that's a really good sign. That means there are patients, loyal patients at this practice that are coming in for their exams and their pro fees. And chances are, with him being older, he's probably missing a lot of things. The details that you as a 30-year-old are going to be able to see. So as long as there's patients coming in for their cleanings, you're probably going to have plenty of treatment when you buy this practice. So that's a good sign. Obviously, I can't go through this entire list in this video or it'd be like a 5-hour video, but just kind of glancing through it, he did some porcelain crowns. He did 16 of those, 65 two-service amalgams. So this guy is still doing amalgam restorations. That's a great sign that he's doing amalgams because oftentimes you're going to end up replacing those amalgams with crowns eventually. This guy's doing general dentistry. If you're able to come in and add any specialty type procedures, you're going to make a killing at this practice. So when you look at comp exams, that's a way to figure out how many new patients there are at this practice. And 51 comp exams divided by 12, 4.25 new patients per month. That's not very many. I would try to figure out why the new patient count is so low. In this case, I think it's because he's old and he's not even trying to find new patients. But especially if you buy from someone who's a little bit younger and it seems like they were trying to get new patients and they weren't able to because of location, maybe it's a saturated market, maybe their office isn't very visible, then that's a case where you might want to be worried about this number. But sometimes you'll find a practice where the dentist doesn't have a website. He's like barely even listed on Google Maps. He's doing absolutely no marketing, so there's no reason that he should be getting new patients, and he's still getting new patients, or she's still getting new patients. That's a practice you really want to buy, because you come in and you set up a website, you start getting some reviews on Google, maybe you make a Facebook page, whatever, you start doing a little bit of marketing to the community, and boom, all of a sudden you have a lot of patients coming in the door. So another thing to look at is going to be the ratio of crowns to fillings being done at the practice. If you find a practice where the dentist is doing a lot of crowns but not very many fillings, that's a bad sign, because that means they might be over treatment planning crowns. But you ideally want to log into the computer and look at some of the notes, look at some of the x-rays. It might be paper charts you have to look through and try to figure out why they were doing those crowns. Sometimes you'll find a practice that has a pretty high ratio of crowns to fillings, but the reason is because the dentist isn't really treatment planning decay. And the only crowns that he's been doing are patients that have come in with cracked teeth, where it was like obvious to do the crown. I've seen some practices where the selling dentist wasn't even taking bite wings, was just treatment planning off of a pan. When you get into a situation like that, you're likely to find a lot of decay. Crown buildup, he only did 15 buildups. He did something like 150 crowns, but only did 15 buildups. Right off the bat, like 80% of the crowns I do have buildups. So that's gonna be a way that you can add a lot of production right there, is just doing buildups when you do your crowns. Easily, I think you're gonna be able to add 100 to 200 buildups in the first year that you buy this practice. So that's gonna be a huge growth opportunity right there. Next thing you wanna do is you wanna look through and make sure that you're able to replicate all the treatment that the previous doctor was doing, or else plan on taking a loss in the things that you're not gonna be doing. He's not placing implants, he's not doing any Invisalign, no ortho that I can see, just simple basic endo. I'd be surprised if he's doing any crazy surgical extractions. I'm just seeing an extraction code. He did 36 denture and partial delivery appointments. It appears that he's primarily sending his extractions to the oral surgeon, and then he is bringing them back and doing the denture in office. If you can just do those extractions yourself, which generally extractions for denture patients are really easy, they're super easy, especially if you get a patient that has like 10 or 15 extractions that need done and they have severe periodontitis, you just take those teeth out and you can easily make like $2,000 to $3,000 in 20 minutes by doing those extractions. So I absolutely would not be referring out your denture patient extractions to OS. Now, if you have a patient where they're gonna be really difficult and they're gonna need to be put to sleep, yeah, fine. But you can do a lot of this in-house. So that's a way to add production right there. Are there any weird, strange procedure codes in here? Sometimes dentists will make up new procedure codes in a way to kind of get around insurance might say they're only going to pay a certain amount for a crown, and the dentist isn't happy about that, so he adds on extra crown fee or laboratory fee or some sort of fee that is technically not allowed by the insurance, but they're doing it because they want to charge the patient more. Between you and the insurance company, whether you want to do that, that's not something I do personally. So overall, this is really a pretty typical production by procedure report. There's nothing that stands out. So finally, the moment we've all been waiting for, we're gonna get to the purchase price of this practice. So the dentist is asking $350,000 for this practice. There are a few different methods we'll use to determine the price of a practice. Today, we're not gonna go into a huge amount of detail and all the math behind different valuation methods. The best valuation method is gonna be a market analysis, where you find another practice that is recently sold in the area that's a similar size and you see how much that sold for. Ultimately though, the only thing that really matters is once you buy this practice, are you gonna be able to make money? I feel like a lot of dentists sometimes worry so much about the purchase price, and it's not really a logical decision. It's more of an emotional decision. They don't wanna feel like they're overpaying. When you buy a practice, you're making so much more money that the practice loan just isn't that big of a deal. Every time you make a payment towards your practice loan, it's as if you're investing, because you're later gonna be able to sell this practice at a profit. And so every time you pay back your practice loan, it's similar to putting money in an investment account. You're building up an asset that you're gonna later be able to sell. So a good rule of thumb to see, are you personally going to be able to make money at this practice, is going to be look at how many active patients are at this practice. So according to the practice broker, there are 770 active patients on hygiene recall. If we look at the production by procedure report, we see that there are 1,172 prophys done in the previous year. By the way, I don't think I see any scalings on here. So that's also gonna be a procedure add right there, as if you start doing SRPs. To make the math easy, let's say that there were 1,200 prophys done. Assuming a patient comes twice a year, that means 600 patients. Every patient is not gonna be coming back exactly at the 6 month mark. So you can add another 10 to 20% to this number. Based on prophys, we're looking at something like 700 active patients. We had 50 comprehensive exams, which are new patients, and about 100 limited exams. So to me, it looks like there's about 800 active patients at this practice. Actually, the broker gave a pretty good estimate. Sometimes brokers will lie about active patients. I've seen brokers say, well, this practice has 2,000 active patients, and then you look and there have only been 300 or 400 cleanings done in the previous year. That's a straight up lie. Like, be careful. This is actually a really honest practice broker. That's good. You need to figure out what kind of production can you do per year on a patient. This dentist here was doing about $500 to $600 per patient. That's kind of the average. The average is somewhere between $500 and $700. If you do a lot of specialty procedures, you're doing implants, you're doing ortho, you're doing a lot of veneers, maybe you're just really good at what you do. You're good at treatment planning. I've seen some dentists be able to produce as much as $2,000 per patient per year. That's extremely rare. Generally, that's probably gonna be in a fee-for-service office, not in an insurance-based office. But if you can, try to look at the work that you've done over the last year and see what kind of numbers you did per patient. And you can probably expect you're gonna be doing a similar amount at this practice you buy. So let's say that you feel like you can do 700 per patient per year. So we said 800 new patients times 700, you can expect about $560,000 in production over the next year. That's assuming you don't grow the practice at all and you're not doing any specialty procedures and you're not that good at treatment planning. If you come in and you're able to do $1,000 per patient at 800, now you just grew the practice to 800,000. Or if you come in and you do marketing and you bring new patients in, you can bring that active patient number up. So at $350,000, you are paying, divided by 800. So you're looking at paying $437 per patient. But remember, this is not just money that you're throwing away. You're actually gonna be building equity in this business, and you're later gonna be able to sell this business. So I wouldn't think of that $400 per patient as an expense. It's really more of an investment. So the deal with this practice, would I buy this practice? Would I want to be the owner of this practice? It's a small practice. It's smaller than ideal. Ideally, you find a practice that's a little bit bigger to buy. However, if you've been looking for a while and you can't find anything else in the location that you're wanting to live, then this is actually a very fairly priced practice. You're getting enough patients to really get your practice started. It's gonna require some work to build this practice up. You're likely not gonna come in and make $400,000 or $500,000 your first year owning this practice. Chances are you're gonna start out making $200,000 to $250,000 at this practice. But if you grow it, if you start adding on additional procedures and bring in new patients, you could easily get this practice to $1 million, $1.2 million, $1.3 million within a few years after buying it. This would be an amazing practice to buy if you are just coming out of school. If you are more interested in lifestyle than making huge amounts of money, you could easily work just 3 days a week at this practice and still make good money. You could maybe even go to 2.5 days and still make good money at this practice. You're realistically not gonna be making $1 million a year if you're working 2.5 days, unless you have a bunch of associates working for you. But you could maintain this production on 2.5 days a week. There's not that many jobs out there where you can be your own boss, you can be in control, and work 2.5 days while making $250,000 a year. And then lastly, if you were thinking about doing a startup and you like the idea of building a new building and growing a practice, then this could be another awesome opportunity for you, because you could buy this, work 2.5 days in this practice while you're building your startup, and then migrate those patients over and then have a big brand new practice with a lot of patients in it. This would be a great practice to buy and merge with another practice. I hope that's given you a good idea of how I initially evaluate a practice. Once we get to the due diligence stage, if you decide to make an offer on this practice and want to go forward, there's going to be a lot more work that's going to need to be done to go in to actually verify all these numbers. We're going to be looking at tax returns. We're going to look at the previous few years' income statements. We just looked at the previous year for this one. There are so many more things that we could get into. We don't have time right now. Take some time to sit down and think about what size of practice, what type of practice do you want to buy, what location do you want to live in. Then when a practice like this comes to market, you're going to be able to sit down and decide, does this practice look like it fits my criteria? Is this the type of practice I want to buy? Make sure to check out Buying Freedom. It'll be in the description. It walks through a lot of the things that we've talked about today and goes into a lot more detail. And also remember to check out the website. We have the practice evaluation checklist, which is going to help you evaluate practices you're looking at buying. If you have any questions, send me an email, leave a comment. I love answering questions. If you want, we can set up a call and I would be happy to look through a practice with you. Having now looked at hundreds and hundreds of these reports, I can generally get a pretty decent idea of if a practice is worth buying just in with a few minutes of looking at these documents. If you'd like me to take a look at one of the practices that you're looking at, make sure to reach out. Being a practice owner is awesome. You are a dentist. You've made it through dental school. You can do this. You're never going to feel ready. You just have to step out and get started. Get out there, find that practice to buy, and become a practice owner today.